Everybody, this is Bill Murphy, and I'm here with the front pages. I'll be reading from the New York Times and the Hartford Courant. Take a look at the pictures. There are three pictures on the front page of the Times I'll tell you about. One is from Brazil, and there are some workmen spraying disinfectant in the Santa Marta neighborhood of Rio de Janeiro. It was taken last month. They're in coveralls and have a big, looks like tube-like apparatus, and they're spraying. Of course, the coronavirus is rampant in down in South America. Now, another picture is a picture of a group of screaming young women. They are at a concert in Liverpool, England, and it says here that the audience was tested for virus, and they're all with their hands up and yelling and smiling. I don't know who is giving the concert, but they're certainly enjoying it. And then the other picture, I'm going to have the story on this one at the very beginning of our broadcast, is a picture of a lady named Precious Coleman, and she's helping her 11-year-old son, Jordan, to do a class assignment using her cell phone. I don't know where this takes place. I'm quickly looking at the article. I see. It's in Clarksdale, Mississippi. That's where this this lady, Precious Coleman, is helping her son. And I'll have that story, as I said, in just a minute. Over to the Hartford Courant. There were three pictures. A sad one at the very top. Salomary Cruz, mother of three-year-old Randall Jones, is mourning with her family friend. The family friend is named Genzali Quiroz. She's 17. And they are at a candlelight vigil for Randall Jones, who was a three-year-old who was shot. And this took place at the corner of Nelson and Garden Streets. And it was on April 12th. So this is about a month ago. And they're mourning. They have their masks on and arms around each other. Two other pictures. Here's a picture of a gentleman who lives at the Maple Leaf Manor. He's his name is Charles Ricardo, and he's got his hands folded, sitting down, looking up at Joanne Combert, who a nurse for Hartford Healthcare, and she has just given him a COVID-19 vaccine. This also took place in April. And it was at a clinic set up at Maple Leaf Manor by the HHC mobile vaccination team. And the other picture is actually a map of the United States, and it gives the percentage of vaccinations that have been given to people in each state, a small map and of all the states, and they've got it color-coded. I'll read what it says here. This shows the percentage of residents of that state. For the total population who are fully vaccinated, non-residents who receive vaccines are attributed to their state of residence. And we'll have a couple stories on the coronavirus coming up, but we'll get right to that story in the New York Times. And it is from Clarksdale, Mississippi. By the time Precious Coleman returned home from her overnight shift at a casino, it was past 9 in the morning. It had been another night of dealing with belligerent patrons who refused to wear their face masks and drunks who needed to be escorted to the curb. Her eyes stung. More than anything, she wanted to fall into bed, but her 11-year-old son Jordan was waiting for her, or more specifically, for her cell phone. Because their Mississippi apartment has no internet, Jordan uses her phone to log into his virtual classroom 2 days a week. By the time Jordan signed in, he had already missed two periods of class, and he would miss more. By the sixth period, he had fallen asleep, cheek smushed into his palm. His mother, who tries as hard as she can to stay awake so that she can supervise him, was also sound asleep in the next room. So neither of them heard Jordan's math teacher announce an upcoming test, one that was particularly critical for Jordan, who was failing the class. "If you don't make at least a C," the teacher said in a tone both playful and serious, "we're going to fight." Jordan is at risk of becoming one of the lost students of the coronavirus pandemic in the most disrupted American school year since World War II. By one estimate, 3 million students nationwide, roughly the school-age population of Florida, stopped going to classes, virtual or in person, after the pandemic began. A disproportionate number of those disengaged students are lower-income Black, Latino, and Native American children who have struggled to keep up in classrooms that are partly or fully remote for reasons ranging from poor internet service to needing to support their families by working or caring for siblings. Many are homeless or English language learners. Others have parents who work outside the home, struggling in the absence of adult supervision. We do have students who have kind of disappeared, said Barbara E. Cage, the principal of Oakhurst Intermediate Academy, the school Jordan attends in Clarksville, Mississippi. The district says the number of students with five or more absences since the fall has increased 20% over the previous year. We're not able to reach them. Studies of how much learning American students have lost in the past year are underway, but the preliminary reports are mostly grim. Even one of the more optimistic surveys found significant losses in math, with a doubling of the proportion of students described as sliders because they had moved down in their rankings compared with the typical year. Another national study from the assessment company Curriculum Associates found a decline of about 16% in the number of elementary school students performing at grade level in math, and up to 10% in the number of students performing at grade level in reading. Jordan is in many ways better off than some of the truly lost students of the pandemic. The school knows where he lives, and he is attending at least some of his classes. But by his school's accounting, he is in trouble, having missed 3 weeks of instruction since September, either because he did not log in or missed most of the day. His school has visited the family's apartment and sent his mother text messages warning that Jordan was in danger of repeating fifth grade. But his attendance has continued to suffer, and so have his grades. Remote learning, which these days Jordan does for half the week, is clearly part of his struggle. His mother says she cannot afford Wi-Fi on her $12 an hour salary as a security guard, a situation shared by many families in Mississippi, where about half of the students do not have reliable broadband at home, the highest percentage of any state, according to a study by Common Sense Media. But Jordan's story, which the New York Times documented over the course of a week in Clarksville, is about much more than inadequate technology. It is also about the added disruption the pandemic has brought to one working-class family that was already struggling to make ends meet. And it underscores the limits of hybrid learning to reach those disengaged students. "I used to like school," he said softly. "Now I don't even like it anymore because it's too hard." We're going to go over to the Hartford Courant now. I have some stories that are on the front page of the Courant. We'll start with the story on the coronavirus outbreak. As Connecticut and the nation race to vaccinate as many residents as possible, a new reality is emerging in the fight against COVID-19, reaching herd immunity, much less completely eradicating COVID-19. Maybe impossible, but the virus can be contained. Overall, getting to a level that will completely halt transmission with regard to SARS CoV-2 seems maybe unrealistic, said Dr. David Benek, an epidemiologist at UConn Health. But between immunity from natural infections and vaccines, it is possible to achieve a high level of immunity. That's a quote from the doctor. "At least in the near future, COVID will be in existence, and my hope is that vaccination will sort of change it from being a pandemic to something that we see in much smaller numbers and much less severity. And I think the vaccines to provide that protection to prevent serious illnesses," he said. At least in the near future, I've read that paragraph. I'll continue with the next one. "Over the course of the pandemic, public health experts have pointed to herd immunity, the level of immunity in a population due to both infections and vaccinations at which large viral outbreaks are prevented, as a key goal of vaccination efforts. National and state experts have said that to achieve herd immunity, at least 70% to 85% of a given population will need to be immune to the virus. But despite becoming the first state in the country Monday to reach partial vaccination for 50% of adults, Connecticut may not be able to hit the vaccination threshold, experts now say. Still, Connecticut has seen the clear benefits of its own vaccination campaign, falling rates of COVID-19, hospitalization, and mortality. Among the state's oldest residents, deaths due to COVID-19 have rapidly declined. The number of hospitalizations has also fallen in recent weeks. The overwhelming majority of state residents hospitalized with COVID-19 are those who are unvaccinated. On Monday, the state's weekly average for COVID-19 cases dropped to 1.9%, the lowest it has been since mid-October. State officials have said they expect the virus to continue to exist in parts of the state where vaccination rates remain low. Governor Ned Lamont said Monday that there will likely be periodic flare-ups of the virus, meaning that the state will have to be very careful and also very agile in its public health response. There will be pockets of people that choose not to get vaccinated, and those pockets of people will provide opportunity for COVID to continue to lurk, Lamont's chief operating officer Josh Gabal said. That's likely the mode we're going to be in for some time, and therefore this is why we're so focused on getting everyone vaccinated that we can, despite the fact that the cases and the test positivity and the hospitalizations are all declining so rapidly. Overall, in Connecticut, 40% of the total state population have been fully vaccinated and 56% have received at least one shot of the vaccine. Reaching that next section of the unvaccinated population may prove challenging, officials have said, as it hinges on harder-to-reach populations and those more skeptical of the vaccine. It's not an on-off stuff. It's not like, we're finally at herd immunity and we're immunity and we've stopped COVID dead in its tracks, Lamont said. 50% fully vaccinated makes an enormous difference. 80% makes an even bigger difference going forward. Keith Grant, Hartford HealthCare's Senior System Director for Infection Prevention, said he thought Connecticut had a greater opportunity than most other states of reaching a level of herd immunity, but cautioned that it remains a very challenging task. Still, he said there is reason to be cautiously optimistic. He noted that among residents ages 65 and over, an age group which saw a high degree of mortality throughout the pandemic, deaths have largely dropped off due to vaccinations. Experts caution that given the global scope of COVID-19 spread, as well as the emergence of new variants and uneven vaccination rates, it's highly unlikely that COVID-19 will be eradicated in the near term. Dr. Thomas Balsak, Chief Clinical Officer for Yale New Haven Health, said that across human history, only one infectious disease has been successfully eradicated, smallpox. It's likely that COVID-19 will not be eradicated, instead joining all the other diseases that plague mankind. If we do not reach that 80% number, as most experts would say is the threshold for herd immunity, then what that means is that we will be living with this disease for some time to come, just like we live with many of the other diseases, influenza, for example, tuberculosis, and polio, he said. Another story on the front page of the Current. Supports the companies, rather, the picture that I described about the ladies in mourning of the three-year-old Randall Jones that was killed. New court records reveal how Hartford detectives used a series of police surveillance cameras and social media searches to track down the two teens accused of fatally shooting three-year-old Randall Jones in a drive-by early last month in the North End. Josiah Smith, 19, and Tyquan Malone, 16, were arrested late last month and charged with murder, and the cases sparked outcry from longtime local activists and top elected officials who have redoubled their efforts to reduce urban gun violence in its aftermath. The teens' arrest warrant affidavits unsealed and released publicly for the first time Tuesday afternoon detail how police used the department's extensive network of city surveillance cameras and information on pseudonymous Facebook accounts to identify all of the people believed to be involved in the shooting. A third person seen on video in a stolen car used to commit the drive-by shooting, who has not been charged in the shooting itself but was charged for stealing the car, also helped police identify Malone and Smith, the records show. That person was arrested for the charges the police had probable cause for at the time, Chief Jason Thody said Tuesday. This investigation is still active and may result in more arrests as the detectives continued to develop and verify information. Randall was killed the afternoon of April 10th while he was sitting in the back seat of his mother's car near 182 Nelson Street behind his mother and uncle and next to his 4 and 5-year-old sisters. A black Honda Accord with three people inside then pulled up next to the car Randall was in, and one shooter opened fire on Randall's uncle, who scrambled over the driver's seat and out onto the sidewalk while multiple bullets whizzed past him and into Randall's arm and torso. Court records show his mother, Salmari Cruz, sped away to St. Francis Hospital and Medical Center, where he was pronounced dead a short time later. While police were at the scene, just 2 hours later, more shots rang out less than a mile away on Magnolia Street, where 16-year-old Jamari Preston was killed in a hail of gunfire. Investigators have said the two incidents are connected, but no arrests had been made in Preston's murder as of Tuesday. A short time later, police located the black Honda Accord used in Randall's shooting, unoccupied, abandoned in a Parkville parking lot known to be a dumping ground for stolen vehicles. According to the affidavits, police have recovered 33 stolen vehicles in that Gray Street lot through the first 3.5 months of this year, court records show. City surveillance cameras linked to the police department's Capital City Command Center captured two young men leaving the Accord and walking east on Park Street, where they passed their sweatshirt and jacket to another man riding a BMX bicycle, according to the affidavit. And another story on the front page of The Current: Biden aims to ease vaccine access. This is from Washington. President Joe Biden on Tuesday set a new vaccination goal to deliver at least one dose to 70% of adult Americans by July 4th, focusing on easing access to shots as his administration tackles the vexing problem of winning over those reluctant to get inoculated. The new goal comes as demand for vaccines has dropped off markedly nationwide, with some states leaving more than half their vaccine doses unordered. Biden called for states to make vaccines available on a walk-in basis and will direct many pharmacies to do the same. And his administration is for the first time moving to shift doses from states with weaker demand to areas with stronger interest in the shots. You do need to get vaccinated, Biden said from the White House. Even if your chance of getting seriously ill is low, why take the risk? It could save your life or the lives of somebody you love. Biden's goal, which includes delivering at least the first shot to 181 million adults and fully vaccinating 160 million, is a tacit acknowledgement of the declining interest in shots. Already more than 56% of adult Americans have received at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine, and nearly 105 million are fully vaccinated. The U.S. is currently administering first doses at a rate of about 965,000 per day, half the rate of 3 weeks ago, but almost twice as fast as needed to meet Biden's target. I'd like to get it 100%, but I think realistically we can get to that place between now and July 4th. Biden said. He said the administration would focus on three areas as it tries to ramp up the pace of vaccinations: adults who need more convincing to take the vaccine, those who have struggled to obtain a shot, and once the FDA gives approval, adolescents ages 12 to 15. Acknowledging that the pace of vaccination is slowing, Biden acknowledged that the inoculation effort was going to be harder when it comes to convincing doubters of the need to get the shot. He said the most effective argument to those people would be to protect those they love. This is your choice. It's life and death.